Let us bow together in prayer. May the words of my mouth, and may the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Those of you who receive our weekly email and read the one that was sent out this week know that I plan this morning to begin a series of sermons on the general theme, telling stories. I indicated in the email that 2 weeks ago I attended the 50th anniversary of the National Campus Ministry Association. That's a professional organization for those of us who have been in campus ministry. 70 of us came to St. Louis, Missouri, where that organization was founded in the old Mark Twain Hotel. I have had at least 1 foot in campus ministry for 44 years, beginning SUNY Albany, then up at St. Lawrence University, then SUNY Oswego, and finally coming to Long Island back in 1972 as the executive minister of Long Island United Campus Ministries, supervising work on campuses from Adelphi all the way out to Southampton. I have just recently finished my term as the SAGE representative, that is the person representing retired campus ministers on the coordinating cabinet for NCMA. And one of my jobs for the past year has been to solicit stories from SAGE colleagues who have also been in the field for a goodly number of years, at least 30. And those stories we hope to publish within this next year. I'm surprised that we have received 50 of those stories so far. That's pretty good because the pool to draw from is only around 60. And most of the authors are in their 70s or 80s now. All of us sages were serving as campus ministers back in those days that we called the heyday of campus ministry. That was back in the 1960s, a time of a lot of activity on our college campuses. You can remember that period. Civil rights demonstrations, protests against the Vietnam War, and then the return of veterans, affirmative action in hiring faculty and staff, the early days of both the Women's Liberation Movement and then the Gay Lesbian Liberation Movement. Though each one of these causes is broader than simply being university-wide, nonetheless, each played a very major role on the campus, probably much more visible than in society as a whole. And it was, I think, inevitable that the landscape of the 1960s and early 1970s had a major influence on campus ministry and on us campus ministers and the programming that we did. And that is obvious as I read the stories that were submitted and have now come to me. The stories told indicated how those events shaped us. And those stories were easily told, whether they were stories from 40 or 50 years ago, or stories somewhat more recent. And each story submitted had a message that went way beyond the details of the story itself. Each contained a message that conveyed a truth, conveyed a learning, which was a truth. A learning for the individual and for the rest of us as those stories are getting read, because the events were continuing to be experienced as a truth. And now, having returned to this pulpit, I knew I wanted to give a series of sermons about stories, because stories are important in who we are. And furthermore, stories from the Old Testament and the New Testament, and from those days to our day, are the very foundation of our faith. Both our Old Testament and our New Testament lessons for this morning draw attention to the importance of those stories. Kevin read from Psalm 77, a marvelous hymn which begins with the psalmist in deep lament, a heart that's broken, a soul refusing to be comforted, a spirit that seems exhausted, unable to sleep, and so troubled that he's unable to even form words to describe his situation. But then the psalmist recalls the stories of God's wonders in Israel's past. Let the psalmist speak for himself. You are the God who works wonders. You have displayed your might among the peoples. With your strong arm, you redeemed your people, the descendants of Jacob and Joseph. And then the story gets remembered again, and as the psalmist tells it, or should I say, probably sings it, I hear the tempo increasing. I hear the instruments increasing in volume, for this is truly a story worth telling, truly a song to be sung. Listen to the psalmist. When the water saw you, O God, when the water saw you, they were afraid. The very deep trembled. The clouds poured out water. The skies thundered. Your arrows flashed on every side. The crash of your thunder was in the whirlwind. Your lightning lit the world. The earth trembled and shook. Your way was through the sea, your path through the mighty waters, yet your footprints were unseen. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and then Aaron. It's a story. It's a marvelous story. It's Israel's story. A story that gets told in one fashion or another every time a Jew pauses to meditate and worship God. That story, told over and over again down through the centuries, having the same power and magnetism for the Jew of the 21st century as for the Jew of 900 B.C. A story that seems to lift the people out of doldrums where the heart is broken, the soul uncomforted, spirit exhausted. Even when another disaster hits, such as the bombs hitting in Israel this past week, what keeps the people going, that is the people of faith, the people of trust, it's the story. That story and other stories that carry a message beyond the details of the story itself. Details, by the way, which you can always question. Details that the historian and the biblical scholar seriously question, maybe even discount. And yet, the story cannot be discounted. The message of the story cannot be discounted, for the story seems to convey a truth. It conveys a learning. Because in the very retelling the story, that truth, that learning gets experienced again, and history becomes my own story. I turn to the New Testament lesson from the 7th chapter of Luke. The Gospel of Luke, that is the good news which the writer intends to convey. It's a scene from the very early days of the ministry of Jesus. It says, the word came to John the Baptist by way of two of John's disciples that this Jesus just might be the one that Israel has been waiting for, watched for, expected, anticipated, yearned for, because he had been promised. A promise that gave the people hope. Hope that a new day would be coming, a day when God's kingdom would come and God's will would be done on earth. That was their daily prayer. And now what are they to make of this man from Nazareth? Well, three disciples of John, at the urging of John, asked Jesus the $64,000 question. Are you the one who is to come? Or are we to await another? And the reply of John is most haunting. The reply of Jesus, rather, is most haunting. Go tell John what you have seen and heard. And if your preacher can be so bold, I'll throw in another verb besides seen and heard. Experienced. Go tell the story. For in telling, new eyes will be open, new ears unstopped. Tell that story until the message breaks through and the truth, the way, the life incarnate in this man from Nazareth gets experience and gets incarnate in your life. And from the year 30-something down to the year 2014, whenever and wherever the stories are told again and again and again, stories of the one who lived and lives forevermore, that one becomes experienced afresh in the very telling of the stories. When in St. Louis, my fellow sages, retired campus ministers, most of whom I indicated were in their 70s, some even in their 80s, told their stories of events. Many of the rest of us had experienced the same as well, even though the telling differed. No doubt many of those stories became embellished. I remember, this is just a little aside, when I was a young boy growing up, there was a local minister who became quite well known as a pulpiter. He drew people from all over the place, and he told marvelous stories. And one day I had lunch at Bob Smith's home. He was not present, but his wife was present, and I said to her that I was just amazed with the stories that Bob told about a woman who was feeling terrible, but after spending maybe 10 minutes with him, left the office and was renewed and everything. And Mrs. Smith said to me, well, Bob has a tendency to exaggerate a little bit. I warn you, every preacher, including this preacher, may make more of a story than simply the simple facts themselves. But that's what happens as we tell our stories. Reflecting on this now, I realize how our storytelling was much the same as the storytelling that we find in the scriptures. Certainly true of the stories contained in the gospels. Each of those gospel stories are about Jesus. The stories differ even when telling of the same event. Did Jesus feed 4,000? Or one of the other gospels says 5,000. One gospel gives the first number, another the second count. That's just one example. There are many others. Though details differ, but what was important was the impact events had on the storyteller. True for those gospel writers, true for those of us gathered in St. Louis. True for any of us, even here this morning, affected by particular events in history in which we played a part or witnesses to it. Experienced differently. Spoken about differently. But they remain our stories, shared with one another, thereby allowing them to be experienced by us again in the telling of it, and enriched by others reflecting on our telling. My story shared becomes our story, serving to define who we are. And even as the stories of the scriptures become our story, defining who we are, let our stories today do the same.